All right, so are you ready?
Yep.
All right, I'm going to take us live in three.
I'm ready.
What was that?
I was opening a pop.
Oh, it totally sounded like loading a shotgun or something.
Let's go, XCOM. No, wait, Gone Home.
Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, I can't believe it's Friday again.
Well, it's not actually Friday, it's kind of Monday.
Don't say that.
We were late this week because of me. I apologize greatly, guys. I had a friend visiting from Ontario, and she was down from Friday morning until this morning. So, sorry, but, you know, life happens. So here we are on Monday, which is actually good because it gives us good timing to, you know, wrap up the whole Gamescom thing. We're not going to miss anything. If we'd done it on Friday, there would have, I'm sure, been tidbits that happened over the weekend we couldn't cover. So, you know, in the end, good thing, I think.
Well, I mean, I was just getting back from Germany yesterday, so.
Lies.
Not true.
Lies.
At the Gamers Inn, we cover everything live. See us at PAX next week.
Yeah, really. Oh, and then BlizzCon in the fall, yeah, right.
Oh, there's so many great gaming events that I don't think I'd ever want to go to E3, but I would love to go to PAX or BlizzCon.
Agreed. I'm actually hoping to go to BlizzCon next year because that would be absolutely awesome. It's like, what is it, the 10th anniversary?
Ooh, is that next year?
Yeah, I think so.
I think you might get
of WoW.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, So I guess maybe at that point you'd probably get like a screening of the Warcraft film because they would have been done shooting at that point, or at least an early look.
Yeah, there's going to be some really good stuff at BlizzCon next year, so that's what I'm crossing my fingers for. So speaking of Blizzard, guess who's been playing Hearthstone?
Sales
this
geek.
Girl.
Oh. That joke would have so been funny if it was the fact that he didn't get a code, but he did get a code.
He did, and yeah, after giving us a whole lot of crap on Twitter over having codes and talking about it too much, because I thought I was being nice. I was like tweeting out some stuff, my thoughts, and I was posting some pictures and some videos on Instagram of like the cool stuff I was finding in game, and everyone is giving me shit saying like, oh, look at you, you've got the beta, la la la, and I'm just like, oh guys, I'm sharing the love. Are we not sharing the love anymore? Okay.
The internet's weird. They see something they can't have and they just attack it. And I see the Hearthstone everywhere. I don't have a code yet. I'm just really excited to hear about it because I have yet to, not to get into, but have yet to try one of these like virtual card games besides the Pokemon card game on the Game Boy, which was fantastic. But how is Hearthstone? I want to hear about this.
Well, I started playing Magic like way back in the day, like the actual physical card game, and then I tried to get into it because I obviously fell off of it, and tried to get into it when they digitized it. I think I tried the Magic 2012-13, and now I've got 2014, and I can't really get into it. It's really difficult. I find the AI is hard. Like, I don't think I've beat past the second person in 2013 and the first person in 2014. Like, I can't even beat the AI.
Weird.
It's very, very, very complicated. Which, Hearthstone? Not. Hearthstone is like, well, okay, in Magic, you have different kinds of mana. So you have like forest, swamp, fire, water, I think earth. There's like five or six anyways. And then so a given card would cost you like two forest and a swamp, or three water, or four fire or something, right? And the more powerful the card, the higher the cost. Well, what they've done in Hearthstone is they've just made one kind of mana that's just mana. So right. You have cards that are cost you 1, 2, 3, all the way up to, I think the highest I've seen is 9, I think. And so the idea in Hearthstone is that every turn you gain another mana. So the games are only ever like 15 minutes maybe, because like the cards are really powerful. Your heroes have 30 health points. So basically in any given turn, if I don't have a character with Taunt, which is basically a tanking card, if I don't have a tank, then the other person can just attack my hero directly and doesn't have to attack any of my cards. So the games go by really, really fast. And it's really easy to get into, catch on to. You start getting rare cards very quickly because as you progress, like as you play more games, you get gold coins, and then completing every like daily quest gives you coins and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the quests will be something like win 3 games with the Warlock, you know, beat a person in a PvP match sort of thing. Because you can choose to play against players or AI.
Oh, okay.
So if you choose to play against players, that's one of the daily quest rewards. And then you use your gold coins to buy booster packs, and then you unlock more and more cards as you go. So I found, like, I mean, I was getting all kinds of stuff, you know, because you're guaranteed one rare or better card in every pack of 5 that you buy with your coins, or real money. There, you can go either way. So I've only been using gold coins because they're going to wipe everything anyway, so.
Right. You don't have any interest in putting money into the beta, even though the gold sort of carries over?
Well, yes, it does. Basically, what happens is you have one set of 5 cards. So I think they're like epic booster packs or something like that. And you can either pay 100 gold coins or 299.
Right. Okay.
And I think daily quest rewards vary, but that's basically like completing 2 daily quests. And I don't think... I think once you've done your daily quests, like it's not like it gives you more. You get like 2 per day sort of thing. So you can't do... And I think you might get gold by winning matches too. There's 3 different kinds of play. There's... practice mode, which is against the AI. There's play mode, which is against either a friend or a random opponent. And then there's arena, which is, it's actually pretty cool. It's like you go in as the whatever class you want to play. So there's like warlock, hunter, mage, warrior, shaman, you know, whatever the 9 basic vanilla classes are in WoW.
Mm-hmm.
So no monks and no death knights. And then you get a random 3 cards thrown up in front of you, and you have to choose between those 3 cards of which one you want in your deck. And so you do that 30 times and you build a randomized deck, and then that's what you play with instead of like having a predetermined deck. So it kind of gives you a preview of all the other cards that are available in the game that you may or may not have actually unlocked yet through the practice and the play. So, I mean, there's, and then you go up against another random person doing a random deck, and it's a PvP thing. So, I mean, there's 3 different play modes. It's a really, really deep game, and it's like really quick to catch on to, but very, very difficult to actually master. Because, I mean, like, I've been playing pretty much exclusively as the mage, because that's what you start off as.
Sure.
And so I've got a pretty good idea now of what to do and how to play as a mage, but like I've tried playing as other classes and I just like lose all the time, and pretty much the first like 2 or 3 times you go up against a class, they just rock you because it's like a totally different play style.
So in terms of class, playing as a class, what does that mean? Like you pick a certain class, it's the next logical step in explaining the wonderful world of Hearthstone, but
yeah.
So a mage, does that mean you just get Frostbolts and can polymorph once in a while, or like how does that work?
That is actually my favorite card in the game is polymorph, because literally it's like you can have up to 2 of them in your deck, and it only costs 1 I think mana, maybe 2 to cast. So you can use it pretty much at any point during the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns the person or like any minion of your choice into a 1/1 sheep, which means 1 attack and 1 health. So if they throw down a tank that's like, you know, 10 health, which would take you like 3 or 4 turns to kill, you just throw down polymorph and it's like, boof, now you're 1/1 and dead.
Nice. Which, oh, that's cool.
On the receiving end is very frustrating, but, you know, like it's saved my butt a couple times being a mage and having that ability. So there are, so far, I think about 12 cards, I think, that are class specific. So only mages can use those cards. So, for example, polymorph. But then there's a whole ton of neutral cards, which means any class can use them.
Hmm.
And so you have to build a deck based on like playing on your class's strengths, deciding what your playstyle is going to be. Like, do you want a whole bunch of heavy tanking cards? Because if you play a tank card, they can't attack you. They have to attack and kill the tank first. Do you want to be very, very aggressive? Do you want to have some healing power? You know, because every single deck that you have can only have 30 cards. So you have to pick and choose from all of the, I don't know how many cards there are off the top of my head, but a lot. I mean, probably better part of 100 cards, maybe. And you can have, like I said, two of some card. So it's like, yes, there are 100 cards to choose from, say, but then you could realistically only pick 15 cards and just have two of each of those 15, you know? So there's really a whole ton of combinations of what your deck could possibly look like. So even if you're going up against another mage, you could basically build like a Frost Mage deck and a Fire Mage deck. And, you know, there's all these different kind of powers and stuff and different play styles. And even within the same class, it's really, really interesting, but so frustrating when you play against somebody who's played more and, like, totally understands the game, and you're just like, yeah.
So, this is crazy, because Blizzard is sort of, like, really proving themselves to be a super developer. I mean, they have Hearthstone. I mean, calling them a super developer shouldn't really be a surprise to anybody. You have Hearthstone, you have WoW, which is a current expansion and a new expansion, supposedly. Then you have Diablo 3's new expansion. You have StarCraft 2's new expansion. Like, that's crazy. Like, they're literally doing what Nintendo is doing with their properties, in the sense that they are developing a new iteration for their properties constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, including developing, well, not like Nintendo. They're actually developing their new IPs, right? Titan being a new IP. That's just crazy, and the turnaround on this Hearthstone has been unlike Blizzard, you know, just, you know, very fast. You know, you get the reveal, and then 4 or 5 months later, we have a beta, and is there any indication of when this beta will, you know, I'm asking for a friend, I swear. When is this going to be coming out to more people, and if not actually open to everybody? Does it feel like ready?
From what I've heard, the only reason that they're doing a beta is because they want to make sure that the classes and the cards are balanced. They don't want to see that, you know, druids win all the time, or, you know, mages keep polymorphing everyone and, you know, like, you know, winning when they shouldn't, or, you know, basically make sure that everybody is on even playing field. Right. So, in terms of the actual game, it feels extremely polished, you know, like there are really cool spell effects, which is kind of the biggest bonus of having a virtual card game as opposed to a real card game, is that you can actually like cast a spell and then light everyone on fire. And there's actually an animation tied to that. So it makes you feel like a real badass. So I think I've only had one real, like, not game ruining, but definitely put a dent in the playing experience, is I was playing against Hokkaido, and we were chatting back and forth, and we were playing multiple matches. So one match ended and I had the chat window open, and then it brought me into the select your character screen, and then after that I could close and open the chat window, but I could type in it and send him messages, but I couldn't see anything that he was writing to me. So what happens is, when someone writes a chat message, if you have the chat window closed, it pops up in like the bottom corner of your screen with like a little speech bubble, and it will show you what they said. But it's only there for a second or two. So I could tell he was saying stuff. I got most of it, but, you know, like, I couldn't go back and read what he was saying. So my chat window did kind of bug out. But, I mean, there are some parts of it that you can tell. Like, I mean, I went to go into my video settings, and there is no vertical sync setting. You know, like, it feels like there's some serious features missing, or that are kind of buggy. Like, it feels a little bit like a beta, but in terms of the actual, like, I mean, still, some of these issues that I'm having in the beta with Hearthstone, I mean, none of them are huge. The actual game never crashed. The play style, like, nothing froze. It was all very polished, you know, and it's so funny. Like, I've had bigger issues in final games than I'm having in this beta. Like, just Blizzard beta equals not like, it equals pretty much everyone else's regular release.
Right. So, remember, Blizzard is listening, so answer carefully. Where did you report the bug?
I haven't yet. It happened right before
Giving a beta key to someone. I'm just joking.
You should have reported that. I wrote it down in my phone. I made a note, and I was just like, I have to send this to Blizzard, but I stopped playing right before my friend got here. So, and then I was just like, I have to remember to do this. And then I literally thought of it right before we started the show, and I was like, I should totally report this. And I don't even know how to report it. I probably have to go to the forums or something, but...
You know, if SalesGeek didn't have his code and was listening to this, he had already probably sent that to Blizzard and said, hey...
And I do understand that I am part of a beta, and that as a beta tester, I am doing exactly that, testing and sending bugs and stuff like that, and I get that. And it's not that I'm not going to send it to them. So it's
You're media, though. You don't have to report bugs. You're there to report to the masses and co-host how awesome Hearthstone is.
I mean, I know I'm kind of turning into a Blizzard fangirl, but... It's pretty fantastic.
Hey, I mean, it's not quite us talking about WoW for 15 minutes, but I guess it'll have to do this week, right?
It's going to be, as far as I can tell, free to play. And the one thing I really like about what they've done is that they are not spewing, like, spend your money on this, buy more of this, you know, in your face all the time. It's literally, like, the only time that you see real money... like an option to use real money is when you go into the shop and then it's like, here's a pack for 100 gold and here's a pack for 299 and you just click on the one that you want. So if you don't have 100 gold, you can click on the 299 one. Otherwise, it's just like, it's almost like it's not even there. So
that is the way to do it. I mean, like, I'm more inclined to give, and I don't think I've ever given money to a free-to-play title, mainly because all the ones I play have some sort of dollar sign at the base level of the UI where it's not like, you know, it's like, oh, you want more coins? Click the plus button to add more coins. Mm-hmm. And then right beside it is a bunch of dollar signs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I would rather grind than, you know, obviously you guys want me to give you money for this. So, you know, but it's different when, you know, if I go into the shop, that's where I should see the dollar signs. You know, that's where I should see the buy option. So I'm glad Blizzard is doing this right, because they've already announced, or that's been so long since I've been in WoW, but like weeks, but they already announced that they're doing an in-game store for WoW too. So this sounds great. So people shouldn't be upset that they're adding a store to WoW then, right?
Right.
Okay.
And the thing is, like, I mean, and this kind of leads into what the other game that I played this week, which was Plants vs. Zombies 2, which I think is doing it wrong.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I know that we talked about it last episode, but I've actually played it now. I've played all the way through the first world, and then I went back to try to get all the stars in the first world. Because I was just like, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to get as many as I can at the lower level because they're probably the easiest stars, and I'm not going to want to come back to the Egypt stuff once I jump into the pirate stuff. So I'm just going to try to get as many stars as I can, and then I'm going to move on. Like, I think I have like 33 stars or something now. So I've unlocked all the stars. I think I had about 12 keys dropped, so I think I opened one of the gates that gave me the carry extra plant food, so I can carry 4 instead of 3.
That's good.
But the thing that really ticked me off is I got to the first star on level 7, I think. It was definitely level 7, I can't remember if it was the first star or the second star, and the objective is do not use any sun for 90 seconds. Well, last time... It was, like, the last time I saw that goal, it was don't use any sun for, I think,
probably 60 seconds.
And I just made it. Like, I planted my potato bomb right with like just enough time, like the zombie got there and started eating my potato bomb right before it exploded, like right before it armed and exploded. So I mean, like, it was really, really close to not being able to do it. So I was like, 90 seconds, like, how am I not going to spend any sun for 90 seconds? So I had the little iceberg lettuce thing, which will freeze the zombies, and I tried using that, but it only froze it for, you know, whatever it is, five or 10 seconds maybe, and didn't buy me enough time and didn't recharge enough or recharge fast enough for me to actually use it that second time. So I was just kind of like, oh man, what am I supposed to, oh, you know what I'm supposed to do? I'm supposed to spend coins and buy the power-ups and use the power-ups instead of using the sun. And I was just like, but then say, for the sake of argument, I spend 1,000 coins, which I was doing really well. I'd built up like 16,000 coins, I think, and I hadn't spent anything. I hadn't bought any power-ups, like nothing. And I should say, in-game currency is these gold coins. So,
and it showers you with coins. I mean, you got to be really relying on those power-ups to have to buy coins with real money.
Yeah. So I did buy a power-up just to see if that was the way to do it, and sure enough, that's the way to do it, is buy a power-up, kill the zombie with the power-up, and then, you know, it gives you enough time before the second zombie comes, and you can kill the second zombie with whatever.
Well, okay, it sounds like you're approaching the goal backwards. Like, what I did with those goals, because they do crop up, and they just keep getting harder, like it's 120 seconds in the pirate level. And what I do is I build up my base, and I find by the end of it, I have more than enough time without spending sun.
What do you mean you build up your base?
Well, I build up, like, all my defenses, right? And then the last 90 seconds of the match.
But there's a timer at the beginning.
But it just fails and resets. It just keeps resetting. Those goals, you don't have to do right at the beginning.
I thought you had to do it right at the beginning because it was saying, like, counting down from 90 seconds.
Yeah, I thought that too, and then...
Because, yeah, I've definitely done most levels without planting anything in the last minute or so of the match, like, easily.
That's the way I always did those, and, I mean, I remember...
I thought that at first. At first, it sounded like you could do it at any point during the level, but then all of a sudden there's this countdown timer, and I was like, oh... Okay, well then that makes me less angry, but I was... Well, basically, the thing was, like, if you use the power-up right at the beginning to get that goal where you don't spend any sun, then the power-ups cost anywhere from 800 coins to 1,200 coins, which is a pretty big chunk, and you don't get them back if you lose the level. So if you are bad at Plants vs. Zombies, and if you lose the level, because they're always tied to other goals, like you can't lose any lawnmowers, which are your fail-safe, like, oh my god, the zombies are going to eat my brains. There's one at each row, and if the zombies get to the lawnmower, then the lawnmower shoots down the row, kills all the zombies in the row, and is basically like a reset button for the row. You have to replant, but, you know, whatever. So, basically, like, if you lose a lawnmower or something or fail in some other way, it's not like you get those coins back. So, you know, if you hit a really hard level with a really hard goal, then you've got, like, you know, I don't know, 3, maybe 4 shots before you run out of gold. Because, like I said, I amassed a lot of stuff. I didn't use power-ups through all my other playthroughs. And I had about 15 to 16,000 gold. So, I mean... using a few power-ups and losing that level a few times, all of a sudden you're down to no gold, and then what do? Oh, you buy gold. And there's constant pop-ups, I found.
Yeah, at least every time you open the app.
Yeah, and I found it was every time I opened the app, and then also every time something significant happened, like... when I got far enough to unlock the Stargate to go to the pirate thing, then there was a pop-up. I think the first time I opened, like, a gate, like, with the keys, there was a pop-up. And then there was a pop-up when I was doing the pyramid thing, which was, like, you start with a certain number of, the endless waves thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a pop-up before and after that. And I was just kind of like, okay, I get it. You know, you have chilies and I can buy them. And, you know, like, you want me to rate you and this, that, and the other thing. And I was just like, oh, man, like, stop now, please.
It's unfortunate, because it is a really good game. And
since, I am enjoying the Plants vs. Zombies gameplay. It's a really nice update. I think I would like it a whole lot more on the iPad. I've been playing on the iPhone because I've been playing on to and from work.
Right.
And I find it really hard to do, because one of the power-ups is you can pinch the zombies' heads and then kill them. I can't, the pinch motion on the phone, it's way too small. So
it's very
hit
and miss.
Yeah, I can use either the flick one to flick them off the screen or the electrocute one, but even the electrocute one I find is really tough, so.
The electrocute one is basically the win button, because I just kind of like, you know, and it usually kills a good portion
of them. You just
squiggle. Yeah, it seems to work. I agree. I think on the iPad it's probably a better game. Unfortunately, my iPad 1 can pretty much not handle anything that comes out new, but it would run on your iPad too. But since we last talked about it, I unlocked all the worlds, and I've just been playing like sort of whenever I'm bored, like at lunch or something, and just kind of sitting there and plugging away. And I remember me saying that I had unlocked the first world and hadn't got to the Stargate at the end of the second, and man, that's where it hits you. I think, I can't remember if I said this, but like you get to the end of the second world, whereas at the end of the first world, it's like you need 15 stars. And at that point, you pretty much collect half of them just by going down the paths and stuff. So it wasn't that bad. The last one's like 30, which really requires you to go back and grind. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I shouldn't complain, because most of the challenges are fun, and it's still like the same good old Plants vs. Zombies defense with like an added twist of the challenges. But the one good thing that comes out of this sort of structure is that we are going to get more PVZ content faster than it took them to get us Plants vs. Zombies 2. You know, like I think they've already said that the next major update is like Future Zombies, and that's probably going to come out in the next month. So I think we should... If we want to focus on the positive, there's your positive. If we want to focus on the negative, we can focus on, you know, the free to play.
I mean, I just think that they've basically done free to play wrong. They've done free to play the same way that EA implemented it in The Simpsons, and it's just like there are some things that you just can't really do if you don't pay money, and you know, like it just it bugs me when money becomes like a win thing, a win button, or whatever you want to call it. You know, if you've got, you know, that piece of gear you can buy that gives you extra XP or more strength or whatever, and then, you know, or if you can just buy power-ups over and over and over, or whatever the case is, like, I don't like it when money impacts gameplay. If you want to give me a different color hat, I will wear a different color hat, and I'll probably pay for it, and that's fine. But, you know, as soon as you start, you know, changing the mechanics of the game based on who's paying and who's not, that's when I start to have a problem, and I don't like it when it's thrown in my face. So
it's not really like, I wouldn't even call it a win, but I think what most frustrates me about, like, it's literally a paywall in the sense that unlocking a new world and paying for it is just, I don't want to play the game, I just want to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's what it's like.
So, because have you actually paid real money for it yet?
No. I mean,
you used your stars and unlocked
I have
stuff.
No interest in. I enjoy the gameplay so much that I don't mind spending an extra hour kind of going around. But the thing that frustrates me is there are literally paywalls in the sense that the keys randomly drop. And in order to unlock those gates, it's like $1.99 a pop, and I'm like,
yeah.
Well, I'm not going to just... Like, I was fortunate enough to get all the keys that I needed in Egypt. I am not anywhere close to getting all the keys I need for the Pirate and Wild West. And I'm not going to pay for it. I think I'll probably revisit those levels enough that the keys will eventually drop. And there is a lottery system. Each day, I think a Yeti appears. And if you kill the Yeti, you get, like, a treasure box, which sometimes gives you, like, three keys. But anyways, like, I have no intention on paying $1.99 for three extra challenge levels. That's crazy. Like,
although I will say that I'm enjoying those.
They are. They mix up the gameplay, you know.
I really, one of my favorite parts of Plants vs. Zombies the first time around was the conveyor belt one, where there's the conveyor belt going by and it gives you the random plants, and then you just have to try to plant whatever you're given and defeat the zombies that way. And I really like that because you never know what you're going to get. It's not like regular Plants vs. Zombies where you can, build up your sun and have a strategy and be like, okay, at 25 sun, I'm going to do this. At 50 sun, I'm going to do this. At 100 sun, I'm going to plant this. And, you know, there's none of that because you never know what this conveyor belt is going to spit out at you. So, I that's probably my favorite game mode. And I do also like the matching that they've started, although I don't like, because basically what happens is the zombies come out and they have cards. And mm-hmm. then you click on them, and then they turn the card around, and you have to, like, match two. So it's a memory game. But they don't ever give you enough. Like, you know, you could still have two zombies left over at the end where, you know, one's a sun and one's a bucket. And you're just like, well, sun doesn't match bucket. And no matter how hard I try, that's never going to match. So, and then you have to wait for the next wave to respawn. Meanwhile, the sun and the bucket are getting closer and closer to your house. And you're just like, well, but I know what those are. I remember.
Yeah. I will say this about the extra like challenge levels. They all seem very different. Like they aren't the same. So if you were to pay, you know, like, you know what? I don't feel like waiting around for keys. I'm going to unlock this. They're all very different in the sense that when you throw $1.99 at it, you know, you're throwing $1.99 away to get something that's different from the other $1.99 you spent. But I think for me, if I do end up continuing with this game and feel, yeah, okay, I think I should throw some money at it just to kind of, I say I paid for it. And I think if I were to do that, I'd probably pay for one of the upgrades. Not because I feel like I'd be using it no matter what, and it comes in handy, even though you unlock most of them just by unlocking paths, but you can actually get like an extra power seed slot, which would be nice because it's, sometimes I find myself like, I better use this so I can actually collect another one kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And that helps on the endless levels, but I haven't got to that point yet. I don't know when that point's going to come across, but I just really hope that they keep the updates coming because I think that's what will encourage people to pay, really.
Mm-hmm. Very true. But overall, I think Plants vs. Zombies, it's fun. It's definitely something that you should pick up if you have an iDevice of some kind. Like we said, iPad over iPhone, definitely. And it's free, so, you know, there's no barrier to entry, which in the end is good, right? So
Yeah, I mean, you don't even need an Origin account, and for the Simpsons game, you did.
That's true. That's true. They seem to be phasing that out finally, kind of-ish. Yeah. So so what else did you play this week? Because you have some pretty sweet titles on this list here.
Yeah, I picked up Gone Home. This is the, and I'm not going to spoil it, so if anyone's, I know a lot of people who've been following Gone Home.
I've heard a lot about it, probably more than I should.
That's the issue, is that if, I will say to people, and I'm not going to spoil anything, I'm going to describe it as if I was listening to a podcast and hadn't played it yet, because I didn't want to hear anything. I'm not going to spoil anything, so you can keep listening, but this game has been making its rounds. It's one of those indie games like Dear Esher where people are like, you have to play this. Like, oh my god, guys. And I'm not a big fan of that. You know, it feels like I saw a lot of tweets coming out from journalists saying like this game is,
genre changing.
And, it just, it feels a little heavy handed, but I feel like I'm able to wade through that and kind of, you know, say, okay, either they're not being overpowering with this. This actually is a genuine, awesome experience. And I don't like it being compared to Dear Esher. Because Dear Esher was very linear, very straightforward. It felt like a walking movie. You know, you just kind of walked, stopped, listened to the journal. It was very beautiful.
It was. I liked watching you play that game. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I didn't actually play it myself. I've since purchased it, but I haven't actually played it. But, I mean, just the experience, it was like watching a movie, and it was this big mystery, and you weren't quite sure what was going to happen, and it was fun. It was a different gaming experience.
And, I mean, if you haven't experienced Dear Esher, I'm sure you could get your hands on it very cheap at this point. When it launched, it was $10, which was kind of like, you know, people said, like, well, it's about an hour and a half, and it's about the experience you'd get from watching a movie, but it also costs about the same it would to go out and watch a movie. And just like, you know, with movies, when you go to the theaters, it's $10, $15, and then you, if you want to wait, you know, for a Steam sale, you know, you can rent it for $2.50 if you want to do that. With Gone Home, it's a similar sort of argument. It's $20, which is hefty for an indie title.
That is steep, yeah.
I, I'll admit, when I first heard it, indie titles have sort of, we've sort of been, and not just indie, but just downloadable titles in general, we've sort of been hard-coded, sort of treated like, okay, downloadable, $15 and under. You know, if it's anything more than that, we start to question it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is stupid when you think, it's not stupid, it's just, it's kind of weird when you think about it. Like, a game should just be a game, and then when you look at the cost, like, is it worth that to you? And I'm not judging. I think if people don't think this is worth $20, then I can tell you right now. And even the developer said, like, it's going to go on the Steam sale at some point. Just, well, if you want to wait, wait. But I think it's worth the $20, especially being an indie title. I mean, these guys deserve every cent that that you'll pay them, because they've really created something that's unique. It's not a shooter. It's not a sci-fi adventure. You are playing a 20-something-year-old girl who comes home after a year abroad to an empty house, to an empty new house that you've never been in. So you are there with the character in this empty house that you've never been in. Your family moved there while you're away. And you actually arrive out of the blue. Like, they didn't know you were coming home early or something. But, and that's, this isn't a spoiler. This is all just set mm-hmm. up.
Yeah, yeah.
So you come home and the house is empty. And really what you're doing is you're given a map and you're told to explore. Go around the house, figure out what's happened, find out where your family is, because it is empty. And really what happens, what unfolds, is you a story about your family. You get to learn so many things about this girl's family and what you've missed. Because this game is set in 95. And when you think of the 90s, you know, you didn't have Skype, you didn't have email, you didn't have texting. At best, you had phone calls, and even then, like, I'm sure calling Europe would have been very expensive. And when you're traveling abroad, who wants to call home to your parents every once in a while and say, hey, I'm at the Eiffel Tower, it's great, okay, bye. You know, so you're going in blind. Your parents, you don't know what's going on with your family. So the way it progresses is you're just walking around this house, and you'll come across locked doors, so you turn around, and you're encouraged to fiddle through things, like open every drawer. Everything's interactable. You find notes.
Interactable,
that's a new term. I didn't coin that. It's right from the game. You're finding these pages, and I'm going to stop soon because we're going to start getting into spoiler territory, but you find these pages, and they unlock journal entries that are narrated by your younger sister. And that's sort of the driving force behind the game is as you explore, you unlock more of these journals, and it's basically your sister kind of writing down things that have happened in your absence. And you explore some very interesting life things.
I've heard that it is very controversial, that there are some things that happen in the game that some people are upset about, and I don't want to say what, because again, I feel like all of these articles are like, Gone Home has blah 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 blah, and I'm like, oh man, like, just reading your headline totally just spoiled plot points for me. Gaming journalism, grr.
To me, in the year 2013, I wouldn't consider any of this controversial. I just kind of, if it seems controversial to someone, it kind of seems like that's just,
they're going in looking for something.
Yeah. Like, to me, it's kind of like, this makes sense. I'm sure this totally happened. And a lot of people wrote reaction pieces where they were like, this spoke to me in a very weird and real way. And, it made emotions come out of openings, you know. I won't spoil anything. But I think it's worth it. It's about a 2.5 to 3 hour experience, depending on how much time you want to give it. I would suggest to get your money's worth, just to kind of take your time, explore every little nook and cranny, because everything is interactable, and you just want to take your time. Because I found at points I was sort of rushing through it, and I was like, no, I need to slow down because I'm going to miss stuff. And I did end up missing a few things, but I ended up going back. But
it sounds like something that I would enjoy. I mean, I find that a lot of things have been that I've been playing have been kind of falling short story-wise lately. I mean, dude misses his taco, so we go back to Egypt. Like,
well, yeah. If you're going to compare stories.
But, you know, like, I just, and I mean, one of my biggest complaints about WoW in the last year and a half has been the lack of lore and story that I have grasped and been exposed to, you know, especially with all the permanent changes, like, in Kata and whatever else, you know. I mean, story is such a big, I haven't had a good story, I feel like, since I played BioShock, and that was, what was that, March?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a real story itch right now that I just, I want to know what's, like, I want to be told a good story. So, I think I might see if I can't pick this up on a Steam sale. I mean, obviously it'll be on the winter sale, but maybe sometime before then.
It'll scratch that itch. If anything, it'll really scratch it, because this is story. This is very... Like, in terms of Gone Home, when you compare it to Deer Asher had a great story. Mm-hmm. Gone Home has a better story because you're discovering it on your own, and you're piecing it together as you find these things, and your mind is constantly like, oh my god, is this what's going on? Oh no, never mind, this contradicts that, and leads you on a totally different path. Like, mm-hmm. I hadn't pieced together what was going on until near the very end, when things start to come together, and if you, like I said, if you rush through it, you're going to miss clues, and you're going to completely, like... what was going on with this person? I mean, mm-hmm. I must have missed a key part. Because when I actually finished the game, I had missed a room in the basement that totally explained, like, a good portion of one of the pieces. I'm being very general, people, and, yeah. And you're all like, oh,
but
man,
now I
what
know
is he
there's
talking
room
about?
In the basement, so now I'm totally going to go in the basement.
Well, there's a basement, spoiler alert, but, you know, it's a mansion. Yeah, there's going to be a basement. I would highly suggest it, and I would also highly suggest, if you can hold out for a couple more weeks, then I think the spoilers will subside. People will stop talking about it as it, you know, something new comes out. So if you want to wait for a Steam sale, I mean, you probably only have a couple more weeks where spoiler territory is very hot and heavy, but, definitely recommended because, man, that is a story. It's super real. It feels like
even at the $20 price point.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, I've been playing a lot of, like, shooters. I picked up The Bureau and Saints Row 4, which are two very different games. And, you know, it's just, like, they're both very heavy shooters, and I'm just, like, Gone Home was just a treat to just play something that was totally relaxed.
Departure from what you're used to.
It's very different. I haven't played something like it since, well, Deer Escher, so over a year ago, so... It's a nice break.
So you mentioned you picked up The Bureau. What was that like?
Yeah.
We'll just cover it quick.
Yeah. I'm still working my way through it. I'm probably like 3/4 of the way done. If people saw the reviews, it's been getting a lot of mixed reviews. Some slightly high, or not slightly high, but just above average. And some like, this game is pile of shit. Stay away from it. I'm sort of right in the middle in the sense that I love the XCOM setting. You know what?
I mean, you always ride the middle about everything, always.
Well, no, I just enjoy what I play. Like, I try not to play. If I look at something, it's like, I'm probably not going to enjoy that. I'll probably stay away from it. But this was a close one. This was a pretty undecided title because the reviews went out midnight of release, and that's usually a telling sign that it's not too hot. It's been in development for 6+ years, and it shows. It's very... We'll start with the bad points. It's very rough. The lip syncing's off. You know, the sound effects don't play
after
sometimes.
6 years?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been... There's a great Polygon story that details the development and how it's been shown and scrapped almost 3 times. So it's not like they've had 6 years to work on this. I think they maybe only had like 2, but the lip syncing, you get used to it. It just kind of feels a little rough. Like, animations are kind of stiff, but the thing that really does, I love aliens. I love sci-fi. I love the 50s setting. It's very Mad Men meets X-Files. Which is super cool.
I like both those things.
Yeah, and it's a title you'll want to wait for it to go on sale, but I'm kind of enjoying it. It's like a Mass Effect, kind of like a Mass Effect in the sense that you have a your main dude and a squad of two, many different powers for your guys. Those are a hell of a lot of fun to like pause the action and issue commands. It's much more tactical than Mass Effect. In the sense that Mass Effect, you'd kind of just let the AI do what they want. But in the Bureau, you kind of have to direct your AI or your AI squad because the AI is awful. multiple times, I found my guys would be just kind of like not staying behind cover and constantly dying because they're like running up towards the enemy. So you kind of have to babysit them a little bit. That's one of the rough parts. But just the combat is just really fun. It's fun, and I'm just really enjoying it, just mainly because of the setting and, you know, the XCOM goodness. But those people who really enjoyed the old XCOM games probably are going to go into this hating it by default because it isn't the classic strategy title. It is a third-person shooter. There is permadeath, but it's kind of like just in there. Usually when my squad mates die, my whole team is going down, so it just restarts the checkpoint and I move right along. But it's interesting. I would probably suggest people wait for the sale unless when I said Mad Men meets Mass Effect sci-fi 50s and you're okay with playing a little bit of a rough game, then maybe go for it. But yeah, Steam sale that thing right there.
So how much is that a full-priced $60 title, or
it's $49.99. So I mean, at that point, you kind of have to weigh your options. I mean, Saints Row 4 and Splinter Cell that came out last week; those are both probably better titles if you're looking for one game. Or Gone Home.
True. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up what we're playing. So Ryan and I just want to say that we really appreciate the continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. You can use the code THEGAMERSIN to double your RAM when you purchase your new gaming rig. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to Quickfire News.
XCOM proper is getting a huge expansion. XCOM Enemy Unknown was my favorite strategy game of 2012, and in a few months, Fire Emblem Awakening will get its competition for strategy game of 2013. XCOM Enemy Within will launch at $29.99 on PC as an expansion and $39.99 as a standalone console title. New content includes two new brands of soldiers, mechs, and genetic mutations, new maps, enemies, items, and much more. Prepare for more information to trickle out leading up to launch on November 12th.
There will be no trading for Hearthstone. In an interview at Gamescom last week, Hearthstone executive producer Hamilton Chu revealed that Blizzard has no intention to create an in-game auction house for Hearthstone or allow players to trade cards, although it is a trading card game. But anyways, although Chu admitted that an auction house would bring some really interesting mechanics and complexities to a trading card game, in the end, Blizzard decided that the ability to trade cards instead of playing more in order to unlock content would detract from the original vision they had for the game. Although you can buy booster packs with real money, the content of the packs, and therefore the content of your deck, is a random act of chance.
The Reaper of Souls is revealed. Death appears to be coming for Diablo and Tyrael. I should have looked that up. Once again, we had that issue last week.
We did.
Once again, calls to the Nephilim for assistance. During Gamescom, Blizzard announced that Reaper of Souls would be the first D3 expansion. It will feature the new Crusader class, an increased level cap to 70, a new act, and new reigning enemy, Meth... I'll just stick with Death. That's not... Math Guy. You can check out the awesome CG intro and first look at the Crusader in action.
Free-to-play Little Big Planet Hub has been announced. Last week, Sony announced that they are bringing Little Big Planet's Create mode to the PS3 as a free-to-play standalone title. Available to anyone with a PS3 and an internet connection, the downloadable title will be available to players to collaborate on challenges and build levels. Little Big Planet Hub will launch later this year.
Two MMOs stick with the sub-model. Last week, two of the highest-profile MMOs coming out over the next year announced their business plans. WildStar will cost players $14.99 a month with the option to earn credit for game time in-game, similar to how EVE works. Elder Scrolls Online also made their plans quite clear, boldly stating their game would carry a $14.99 a month subscription. Both games will come with 30 days of free play time at the initial purchase. Seems every MMO to come out will at least start with a monthly cost these days. Will you be subbing for crazy rodents or the opportunity to Fostora your friend off a cliff?
Fostora!
I looked it up too. I just read it wrong. Damn it.
Borderlands 2 is coming to the Vita. The game will be ported over to the PlayStation Vita by Iron Galaxy Studios and will be coming out in 2014, which is the quickest quick news story ever. Which brings us down to our topic of the week, which of course is Gamescom. So, Ryan, why don't you take her away?
Okay, so we mentioned above there's a couple Gamescom stories, but we're going to be talking about the two biggest companies at Gamescom. We got PlayStation, Sony, and Microsoft. Let's start with the good news. Let's start with Sony. So, it's all good news. I think Microsoft's still handling themselves. Not really. But anyways, Sony release date. We finally got a release date. A lot of people were saying, hey, it wouldn't be cool if PlayStation 4 came out in October. Well, that's too bad, because it's coming out November 15th in the U.S.
Not too bad. Just isn't that right around the American Thanksgiving?
It's basically what people assume they do. I mean, personally, I'd rather give them as much time as they need, because I don't want another Wii U fiasco where we're, getting broken games, we're getting less games, we're getting a 2-gig patch at start. I think Sony has been really smart with this next-gen lead-up, and they've made very few mistakes. I hate to sound like a fanboy, but I'm trying to think of any mistakes they've made, and maybe the only mistake they've made, and it's kind of a funny mistake, is that they keep making fun of Microsoft, like keep doing these like cheap pokes at them. They did another one at Gamescom, which at E3 it was great because Microsoft actually was being very arrogant about their sort of policies, but at least at Gamescom they were like, they were turning the bend, making some changes, and they said like, oh, but we've been consistent with our policy as opposed to that other company that isn't Nintendo. It's Microsoft. It's weird, and I think that'd probably be their only mistake. But the 15th in the U.S. And launching in November or holiday season in 32 countries, as opposed to what we announced last week, which was 13 for Xbox One.
Yeah, that's a big discrepancy. And I mean, one of the things that Xbox has done now is that they're saying that, their European pre-orders must have been like zero, because now they're offering a 2014 title, which is FIFA. They're offering that free with European pre-orders. And so, their numbers must just be awful. And I can't imagine going from, what did they end up dropping, 9 countries or 20-something countries? I can't remember the number of countries.
21 to 13.
It was a lot. It was less than half of the original countries that they thought they'd be launching in is what they're actually going to be launching in. So, just Microsoft has had setback after setback. I don't know what's going on with them over there. But, they clearly, if you're offering a title with a pre-order, you're hurting.
Well, if we look at the title, a lot of people, I don't know if you're a sports game fanatic.
No.
I mean, I'm not, but what I do know about sports titles is that the first game to come out on next gen usually isn't on par with the prior version to come out on current gen, because they are making a lot of cuts to get it working on a new engine.
Right.
But I don't know that for a fact. But that being said, it's nice that for the FIFA fanatics who go out and buy it day one in September or October, can then continue their campaign on next gen without spending any extra money. That's the one positive I can see out of it, and that's a huge win in Europe. Not really that big a deal here in the States, but and it's not happening in the States. It's as far as I know, it's only in Europe. But
it's a European exclusive, which they haven't given any. Although, we should say, for those of you who aren't aware, Gamescom is in Germany. It's a European con. It's the biggest video game conference in the world, but it's over in Europe. It's not over here. So it is possible that we might get some kind of announcement at some North American press conference.
Right.
Microsoft has been doing a lot of the Apple-style conferences where they're just, doing a press conference separate from any other regular con. So, and we still have PAX coming up, right? So
PAX is this weekend, and I wonder if, Microsoft has got one final announcement in their back pocket, because we don't have date. that's their big news. And do they do that at PAX? Is there a point in doing their own event? Like, everybody come out to Washington. Here's the date. Okay, we'll see you in November. You know, like,
yeah.
Probably not worth it, considering they already have nailed it down to November. But, like, going back to, like, the countries that they're launching, and I had a quick conversation on Twitter with somebody, I can't remember who it was, about the countries. It might have been Paul. Just that if you look at the list, they're still hitting the big markets.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see a lot of people were kind of upset in Europe that they were going to miss their country and probably have to wait till 2014.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those countries all, I'm not saying, like, they were saying, it's like, well, they're probably hitting their main markets. And I said, well, gaming is a global thing now. It's not It's not the 80s and the 90s where it was just like a couple key countries. Now it's global. So mm-hmm. when you miss out on a launch country, that gives Sony or Nintendo or whatever an opportunity to capitalize.
Exactly.
You know? And we already know that Sony is perfectly okay with capitalizing on Microsoft's mistakes. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I know Microsoft is very focused on winning North America. Like, that's their goal. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But
I will say, I mean, I think Sony's big win that came out of Gamescom was the announcement that they were getting Twitch TV support. Because, yeah. I mean, obviously, we're on Twitch right now. Hi, Twitch. We love Twitch. All gamers love Twitch. If you are going to have a streaming service, it's not Ustream. You want to be on Twitch. You want to be able to stream your games live to the streaming service that is set up for gamers. I mean, that was huge, because that was the biggest thing that was pulling me towards Xbox was the fact that if I wanted to stream my console titles, I had to do it in Ustream. And I was just like, that's not where I want to be streaming my games, you know? I mean, I'm a little bit ticked off at Twitch right now with the whole ad thing that they kind of threw in a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. It is a free streaming service. I wish there was a way to remove it for everybody, but there isn't. So, you know, in the end, we make do with what we have, and Twitch is what we have, and Twitch is where the gamers are. So, I mean, clearly, that was a huge win for PlayStation, and I don't know, like, how long they knew about this, if this is something new. They did say that it will be supported, but possibly not at launch, shortly after. So, I mean, it seems like something they must have gone and wooed Twitch somewhere between E3 and now, but support will be provided on the PlayStation to stream straight to Twitch. So
that's huge. It was huge news, because when I first heard that, I was like, oh, great. My only sort of hitch when it came to the next-gen consoles, which seems silly because, you know, because it's about the games first and foremost, and at least I can stream. I guess I can.
But at the same time, I mean, like you were saying, I think last week, that it's right now kind of a pain to stream from your console. Like, you had to go out and buy separate hardware, and, you know, in the end, it's just a pain in the ass, you know? Whereas if you can just push a button on your system to stream to the internet, I mean, you and I stream stuff all the time. So. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to stream gameplay, and I do understand that we're kind of not unique, but definitely a small portion of the gaming population is that streaming is actually very important to us.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, like, yeah, having Twitch is just such a huge win.
Yeah, and it was really the only thing that Microsoft had over Sony in the sense that they were, you know,
other than exclusives.
Well, I mean, Microsoft's all about the sort of like locking down services and saying like, hey, we got Facebook and Twitter on the Xbox. Hey, we got, you know, now we have Twitch. And they really were and made me scared in the sense that like we have exclusivity with Twitch.tv support, which mm-hmm. came out months after Sony was like, hey guys, we have Ustream.
Yeah.
And so this is probably the best news to come out of Gamescom, besides a release date, but but it's really good.
Even then, I would say this is bigger than a release date, because everyone knew that the release is coming in November sometime. So, I mean, what difference does it make if it's November 15th or November 22nd? In the end, the big news is Twitch.
Well, it was a surprise. I really didn't expect to hear this for at least another year. I knew it would come eventually, but this is... No, you hate to speculate, but I'd like to think it happened because Microsoft's just been so iffy on their, you know, pissing gamers off, and it's nice that Microsoft's coming around, but it's been a weird couple months.
Yeah, it has been. And we got a couple of really cool game announcements out of Gamescom, one for PlayStation, one for Xbox, so... Everybody's gone to the rapture. What is this, Ryan?
We talked about Dear Usher when we were talking about Gone Home. This is by the guys who made Dear Usher, the Chinese Room, and they're coming out with a launching first on PS4 title called Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. And the tagline is, the game begins when the world ends. And it's basically, I don't think we know a lot. It's a very beautiful game. And you play a character just wandering around as the world is ending. And, you know, maybe you're searching for a loved one or something. Mm. I don't know.
I was going to say, I'm really, although I like Dear Usher and I like the idea of Gone Home, I do like mystery and stuff like that in my video games, especially if it's telling a good story. But I mean, like, now we've had Dear Usher, we've had, or Esther, or whatever, we've had Gone Home, mm-hmm. we've had Journey, now this Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, all of them big, mostly empty worlds where you're just kind of wandering around and there's, you know, not that nothing is happening, but they all seem to have this a similar feel, a story in a beautiful setting where you mm-hmm. wander around and discover things and it's a couple of hours of gameplay and then you're done. And, you know, like, I just, okay, we can move on now.
Well, no, we should not be complaining about this. Like,
oh, no, I'm not complaining. I'm well, really I pointing should, I, out that ever since Dear Esther, whatever, came out about a year ago, we've had, like, four titles that are, you know, pretty much the same in concept, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I would argue that those titles, having played most of them, I would argue those titles are sort of evolving as opposed to their big budget brothers Call of Duty where it's just like here's another 8 hour campaign.
As soon as I was saying it, I was just like, okay, yeah, but then you've got, you know, Call of Duty, which is the same as Battlefield, which is the same as, you know,
I understand what you're saying in the sense that it feels like we're getting a lot of these, but
it seems like there's a lot of them that came out of nowhere, you know, like it's something that came out last year and now everybody's doing it. Well, I mean, you could even argue that The Walking Dead was similar. You know, you've got your apocalyptic world that you're wandering through. It's, you know, like a click adventure title, and it had a little bit more action than these other games, but it was the same sort of thing. You walk into a space and you look all around and you pick up clues and then you, you know, have interactions with people and then you move into the next space and there may or may not be a quick time smash the zombie event.
Well, you know? I mean, a lot of people would argue that these games were around like back in the early 90s with, like, you know, the classic adventure titles.
This
is just sort of like a revisiting of the genre, and we really don't know a lot about this title, just that it looks great and the premise is interesting. And we know that the Chinese Room can craft a really neat story, and mystery does seem to be one of the key elements of these types of games. Like, I mean, Gone Home is just very steeped in mystery. You have no idea what's going on. You're piecing it all together. And I would love a game that's set in the apocalypse where you have no idea what's going on and you're sort of, you're not solving what happened to the world, but you're getting ideas as to what possibly could have happened to the world. I would love that to be like a subplot to the whatever's actually happening, whether you're searching for a loved one or trying to find a safe room, or I would hope it's more focused around the emotion side of the apocalypse. Like, I'm not going to see anybody. I'm going to, you know, the world is ending. I need to find that person. I don't know what it's about, but I'm looking forward to it just on the premise that it looks really, really cool.
Yeah. So I think we should probably wrap up with Fable Legends, which was the big announcement out of Microsoft.
Right.
So it looks cool. I didn't actually watch the video, so I haven't seen the gameplay or anything like that. But the premise is you have, it's a 5-player game where 4 of your players are playing different roles. So there is a warrior, a magician, I can't remember what the other two are.
Thief and like a rogue.
Typical knight type character. Well, not knight, maybe pirate, I guess. Or like your typical Fable hero character, right? Yeah, same sort of thing. So, no, wait, wasn't there someone with a crossbow?
Yeah, there's the crossbow dude, the knight, the mage, and then, like,
the one with the huge shield.
Stabby guy.
Oh.
Oh, the knight. Yeah. Anyway, there's four characters. Yeah.
There's four characters. They all have different roles. One is crowd control. One is, you know, tanky stuff. One is, you know, heals and all that kind of stuff. Anyways, those are kind of your four main character roles. And you all move through the world, completing quests and killing mobs and doing everything that you normally do in a Fable game and an RPG, all that kind of stuff. With the one exception that there is a fifth player. And the fifth player is the role of the traditional dungeon master in a Dungeons and Dragons role-playing tabletop game, where they decide what quests are available and when the mobs spawn and when the bosses spawn and where. And, you know, they can manipulate the world around you and drop a gate or open a gate or, you know, all of these kind of things. And you build up some kind of points or currency. It's not like they just have unlimited monsters to throw at you, because then that would be obviously a one-sided game. So the whole idea is you can choose to play one of these five roles, and then you go and you play online against your friends or random people, whatever. But one of the biggest things that they're building in this game is a matchmaking system. That's what has apparently taken them so long to create, is to try to balance this matchmaking system. So, I don't know. Ryan, what do you think about this?
Man, it's just, this feels like, and I mean, I haven't played it. I've seen the trailer. It's got the Fable goodness. But this feels like, you know, you're waiting for Nintendo to release the next great Legend of Zelda. And you're waiting and waiting and waiting. It's been years. And then they announcing the new Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker HD. It's like, it's cool, but it's not the Zelda I'm waiting for, you know?
Yeah.
This, and I, again, like, this is a little different because this is a brand new game, but Fable Legends feels like, I wanted Fable 4.
It feels
4.
Like
I want
they
Fable
started,
4.
Well, that's the thing, is that we've kind of been waiting for either Fable 4 or a Fable MMO. And this kind of feels like, well, we tried the MMO thing. It didn't really work. The genre is kind of, not failing, but definitely crowded right now. Everyone is making MMOs. So we're just kind of going to tweak it and take it in a slightly different, but still the same direction. And we're going to make somebody in charge of the bad guys, as well as, you know, the good guys just questing in a static world. So they've kind of taken the randomness of Diablo, where, you know, the world was different every time. They're kind of taking that and applying it to MMOs and throwing in the, you know, PvP aspect. It's trying a lot of things. If it works, I'm so excited, but I am definitely in the same camp as you, is I want Fable 4 so badly. I loved Fable 3.
And I mean, I don't really want a Fable MMO. I would really just prefer, like, I mean, you're talking to the guy who looks forward to every single Nintendo title. Like, I just want, I found self-entitled, but I just want what I want. And unfortunately, Fable Legends, I did remember saying, like, a Fable game would make me want to buy an Xbox One. And I looked at this and it's like, sure, I guess when I have an Xbox One, I'll pick this up. But it doesn't make me want to buy an Xbox One.
No. And I mean, you can play single player against, like, with AI, and basically when you're single player, you can switch between each of the roles. I don't think you can switch. I think you're kind of one or the other. Either you play the dungeon master and try to stop the AI, or you play as the AI heroes and you can swap between the four heroes, but I don't think you can swap in and out of the dungeon master role, because that'd be dumb. Then you could just, you know, win really fast. Because you could just be, oh, I'm a really bad dungeon master against really awesome heroes.
I find the worst part about this news is that they've publicly stated that they have no plans for Fable 4.
Yeah, it's not even that it's far off. It's not even that it's, you know, in development or in talks. It's literally no plans for Fable 4. And it's just like, ugh, knife to the heart, man.
Well, no, it's like knife to the heart and a twist, because it already wasn't Fable 4, and now they're telling you that they're not working on Fable 4. And I mean, I understand developers, they don't want to say, like, oh, don't worry, in 4 years we are actually doing pre-production right now. But I mean, when you look at Nintendo, you know, they're the first to say, like, when asked, it's like, okay, this is Wind Waker HD, but when are we getting Legend of Zelda, the new Legend of Zelda? And they'll say, like, we are working on it, it's coming. I mean, you know,
it's coming when it comes.
And
you know that it's there.
And I understand Microsoft is using their some of their studios to leverage technology. So with this one, you know, they leveraged Kinect with Fable Journey, and that was a failure. And then they leveraged second screen experiences with Fable Legends, and we'll see how that goes. But it's the same predicament Rare is in. Microsoft's using them to work on Kinect titles, and sure, it's successful, but hell if I would just love another Banjo-Kazooie game, and am I getting that? No, I'm not. Like, it's just... You're talking to a Nintendo fanboy who wants, like, his properties to come out every once in a while, yeah, so he can play them, and Microsoft is only doing that with Halo, you mm-hmm. know, which seems like a missed opportunity, you know? Yeah. Especially at launch.
I agree. Although, I mean, we'll have to see. They were saying that they had, I can't remember the numbers now, but there were a lot of exclusive titles coming mm-hmm. out on the Xbox One, so... Yeah, we'll see what original IP they come out with. You never know.
But I think, like, when you look at Sony, they're doing right by saying, you know, here's our launch lineup, here's some original IP, here's some stuff leveraging new technologies, but here's also your the IPs you recognize. Here's your new mm-hmm. Killzone, here's your new Infamous. We're not talking Uncharted right now, but you could, or God of War, but you know they're coming down the road. Whereas yeah. Microsoft was sort of like, here's a twist on Fable, here's a Killer Instinct and a couple new IPs and a new Forza racing game. And Halo at some point. But we're not talking Gears. We're not talking Banjo-Kazooie, whatever, all their other properties. It just seems weird, you know?
It is. Everything that they're doing is weird. Yeah. But, yeah.
Man,
but pretty much.
The gamers in really changed over the last year. Like, we were really pro Xbox for a long time.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah. Well, and I hope they turn it around, but
of course.
I haven't been seeing anything that's really making me jump in their direction, but we'll see. You never know. Mm-hmm. We're still not in November yet, so who knows? Cross your fingers. No. But I think that pretty much wraps up the show. Anything else you want to cover before we wrap her?
No, that was a meaty show.
Yeah, that was a lot of stuff to cover, and we didn't even talk about subscriptions and MMOs, so I think we should get bonus points for not talking about a whole lot of WoW. So, yeah, bonus yeah. points, people.
Maybe next week we'll talk about subscriptions and free-to-play and all that fun stuff.
Well, I do plan to release an article this week about Good. Subscriptions and the value of play, so if you guys really, really want to hear my opinions on subscriptions in MMOs, then... later on this week, you should be able to head over to doghousenetwork.com and check that out. And if you haven't already, my article is up there, the three-parter about leveling to 90. So cool. You guys should definitely go check that out, which is totally not what I wanted to plug right here. What I wanted to plug right here was Slash Loot, because I totally forgot to plug them at the top of the topic. So, you can head on over to slashloot.com, and there are t-shirts from all of your favorite podcasts, including StarCast, which is also on AMOVE, mm-hmm. and The Gamers Inn. Yay!
Oh, I have something to add to that.
Oh, do you?
There's a new podcast that just got added to Slash Loot. Zombies Ate My Podcast has a t-shirt featuring the wonderful artwork of Joel Duggan.
Yay!
So search for that as well.
Yes, you guys should definitely go check out Slash Loot. I don't know if there's any promotions going on right now, but there's stuff happening all the time, so just head on over and check them out.
Yeah.
So you can visit us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com, or you can email us at info@gamersandpodcast.com. You can find us on AMOVE TV, along with other fabulous shows, including StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and This Week in Blizz. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Before we go, I wanted to give a quick shout out and thank you to Greg Moffitt for creating our music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan, who does all of our graphic work. You can find him and everything he does at joelduggan.com. So thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week! Can you hear the plane in the background?
No, when did you get a plane?